guys, and welcome to Drunk Medical Stories, a podcast where two women
who definitely aren't doctors discuss wild medical stories.
With the aid of medicinal beverages of the boozy variety,
this podcast is rated explicit for language and adult content.
We also recommend a strong stomach as we will be discussing the occasional graphic medical condition. And welcome to another episode of Drunk Medical Stories. Woo, I am Terry.
And I am Claire.
And this week, we are going to be calling this episode Water Worries. I had to make sure I pronunciated that properly. Yeah,
I feel bad we keep giving you alliterated names, and those are hard to say straight, even if you are sober.
I know. Water Worries.
Water Worries. Water Worries. Aww.
So before we get started, Claire, what is our medicinal beverage that we're going to be treating this episode with?
So this week, we are taking a break from our usual cocktails because I was really feeling a beer. And so I found the American Beauty Hazy Ripple IPA. Now, you may be saying, Hazy Ripple, that's barely working for the whole water theme we have going here. But, it is from Dogfish Head. So Dogfish Head is oceany. And I really wanted to try this because it's based on the Grateful Dead. And I love the Grateful Dead. So.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. So, this one, I actually had to find a legitimate description of this because I'm just going to taste it and go, hoppy. But according to beeradvocate.com, the reviewer, Super Spec, says that this has aromas of big grapefruit, tangerine, lemon, lime, peach, pear, pineapple, apricot, passion fruit, mango, honeydew, watermelon, berries, red apple, citrus, peel, rind, wood, peppercorn, pine, wheat, cracker, white bread dough, biscuit, light toast, and a herbal, floral, grassy earthiness.
What the hell?
I would not have tasted all that.
It's everything in the kitchen sink.
Yes. It has a light residual sweetness with lingering rosin dryness. A really enjoyable offering, impressive style, example as expected of this brewery. Blue Rabbit Bell reviewed it and said, sweet and happy.
Oh, God.
Blue Rabbit Bell, you are my person. So, let's give this a chance and...
Ooh, nice crackle.
I try. Thank you.
So. My thing is do you think if you hadn't read that you could actually taste all of those ingredients in there?
Absolutely not, because I'm tasting this and going, hoppy.
That's all you taste.
It's an IPA. It's going to be hoppy. I'm usually not an IPA person, but this isn't the worst one I've ever had. It's actually pretty good. I like this. Blue Rabbit Bell had it right. It is sweet and it's happy. And hoppy makes me happy. So.
Well, cheers to that. Always like a good beer.
Always like a good beer. And you are a beer and wine girl, so I figured I needed to give you an ode.
Thank you. Beer is just the staple of Americanhood.
It is. There's something about beer and baseball and or football and or basketball, but not golf.
Not soccer.
And hamburgers and hot dogs. Not veggie burgers.
No. Well, before we get started, I would like to just do a couple shout outs.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
We haven't done any shout outs yet, but it doesn't mean that we don't appreciate everybody and just the podcast community and all our friends and family. And I'd especially like to give a shout out to two special podcasts. One is, and you heard from him on the last episode of Ironic.
Lordy Lou.
Is our favorite podcast, Jack Billings Presents Me and My Neighbor Michael.
Lordy Lou. Lordy Lou. Broken penises and haunted cars.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. If you guys have a second, check it out. It's a comedy podcast and it's all about neighborhood goings on.
And I gotta say, it took me a couple episodes to get into it because I was very confused by what was happening, but it is hilarious.
Yes.
Also, I like hiccup burped in between that, which is why there was such an awkward pause.
That beer got hoppy on you quick.
It got real hoppy real quick.
The next shout out I'd like to give is to a podcast that I recently started listening to and that have been really great and supportive is a podcast called The Roll Call Room.
This is the cop one, right?
Yes, yes. So it is two police officers do this podcast and they are pressing the issue within law enforcement community as far as their leadership, and they're trying to talk about mental health and police suicides. Hell yeah. And the stigma behind it, but it is hilarious. It's very hilarious, and they have one mission, and that's to use comedy to help these crisis and provide resources to first responders. And
heck yeah.
Really anyone.
You know, if there's two things in life I love, it's people who are willing to talk about mental health and people who are willing to be funny about it.
Right, right. I always say, I mean, comedy is, to me, the best medicine for anything, and we can always use a good laugh. And these two podcasts are right in my favorites, and they've been very supportive, and we just like to give shout-outs to them. We are about to get started. Let's do yes. this. Okay. So water worries. Well, we are going to talk in depth about what you should worry about in the water.
And we're not just talking oceans here, people. No. We're talking rivers, lakes, ponds, puddles. Maybe not puddles.
Puddles. Puddles. So I'm going to first tell you how to tell if there's harmful germs in oceans or lakes or rivers.
Yes, preparation is key.
Yes. And so normally we go to the beach or we go to the lake and we worry about things like sunburn or how about drowning?
Yes. Mean, and yes.
Yes. But have you ever considered thinking about the bacteria in the water?
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been hearing recently this last summer that there's been high cases of flesh-eating bacterial infections that have been making headlines. But you're more far likely to wind up with nausea, diarrhea, or a respiratory infection after a trip to the beach or the lake. Don't drink the lake water. So researchers estimate bacteria in the waterways cause more than 90 million cases of stomach, respiratory, ear, eye, and skin-related illnesses every year.
Yeah.
90 million. That's a lot.
A lot.
While fewer than 1,500 cases of flesh-eating bacteria happen here annually.
Ugh,
yeah. So fecal matter, like from sewage discharge, is responsible for a lot of the pollution.
Kills presidents, kids.
After it rains, urban beaches and lakes are often contaminated by the runoff. In the rural areas, it's agricultural pollution. So how can you know if it's safe? Well, there's many ways. Across the United States, they monitor the beaches and the lakes.
Yeah. Yep.
But they do their own testing. And it's not every beach or lake is tested daily.
No.
So typically testing checks for E. coli bacteria in freshwater
Poopy.
And other bacterias. Fecal contamination.
Fecal contamination, kids. It's bad news.
So if levels go beyond the federal established limit, then the beach should be closed for swimming.
Emphasis on should.
Yeah. But there is actually no national requirement to post signs on beaches when the water is contaminated. So here's how you can tell if your beach or lake is contaminated or not.
Does it involve the locals not being there?
actually, if there are a lot of people in the water, that's usually a sign of a community that honors and respects its clean water.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you don't see anyone in the water, it's a good sign to stay out.
Yes.
Do you see discharge pipes? Pollutants may be flushed into the water nearby.
Sorry, I don't like the word discharge.
Is that just like you don't like the word moist?
Oh my God. No, quick pause. During the I episode, when you were doing that, I was literally like gagging out loud, screaming at my car radio. You're a monster and I hate you for it.
Oh, I love that word. Did it rain recently? Urban beaches will be prone to pollution. So even if the beach is open for swimming, you can help protect your health. And here's how. Always wash your hands with soap and water before eating.
Yes. Also, do not be the person who just washes your hands with water and doesn't get the soap, because now you have just left a warm, moist place, which is now going to attract even more bacteria. Dumbass.
Moist. You said it.
I wasn't thinking about it when I said it. It just kind of came out. It was clinical.
Okay. Another thing to protect your health. Try not to swallow the water you're swimming in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have an open wound, by God, please, 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 please do not go in the water.
That includes fresh tattoos.
Yes. It's an open wound still. It hasn't healed.
Yes. No, it is disgusting. It is bad for you. It is bad for everybody else.
And once you get home, it's always recommended that you wash your whole body, that you take a shower, just to get all of the beach or lake stuff off of you.
Yeah. Also, hopefully, sunscreen.
Right. And yeah, you got to get the sunscreen. You got to get the sand, anything else off you. Just clean. Just wash off. And
wash your nasty self.
Last thing is the good news, bacteria doesn't live long in the water. So when you have a problem, it's because there's been recent discharge. If we can keep those pollutants out of the water, there should be no problem for future swimming. Keep on swimming.
Be the Lorax. Protect the oceans.
Yes.
Think of Nemo.
So those are just a few little things about how you can tell if your water's clean or not. Look for pipes around the area. Look for people who are going in and out of the water. And just wash your hands and don't put your hands in your mouth after you dig in the sand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is actually a huge one. So I don't know if we've discussed this or not. We probably have, because I say it all the time because I'm super proud of it. I grew up in Key West, Florida, which is beach town central, though insider secret, the sand is imported because we have no real sand because we live on a reef. Anyway, the sand is where homeless people sleep. The sand is where the dogs poop.
Yes.
So you can get all sorts of nasty, nasty, nasty things from sand. Sand is dirty and disgusting.
Nasty.
It is no different than rubbing mud all over your body, except possibly worse. And we're not talking about the very nice spa mud. We're talking about real nasty earthworm mud. So,
ugh,
don't be nasty. But they actually don't generally put up signs unless it's really, really bad. What they'll do is they'll publish it in the newspaper and then they'll tell all the hotels to make people aware that the beaches are no-go.
Right.
But I don't think I ever saw them put up signs.
I've never seen a sign.
Yeah, I think for us, it wasn't so much that bacteria as it was the algae blooms.
Yeah.
But either way, it's pretty no good. But speaking of growing up in Key West, that leads me into my first story, if you're all right with that.
Yeah, let's kick this off. Let's go.
All right. So because I grew up in Key West, I took a marine biology class 1 year in high school, because why not? And one of the things my professor taught me about was called Ciguatera. Now, Ciguatera is a fish-borne bacteria that is almost similar to malaria in that it gets you sick, but it lingers. So you'll feel better and then you'll feel sick again and then you'll feel better and then you'll feel sick again. And it just comes in waves and it can last for months or even years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Now, this is normally seen in reef fish. And if you've ever seen a barracuda, they get really, really big. They're carnivorous fish. And the running rule of thumb with fishermen is longer than your arm does harm. And that's because barracudas are significantly more susceptible than to ciguatera than some other fishes. And we had a local case, probably like 15 years ago, where these two guys went fishing in a preserve where they weren't supposed to be spearfishing. They got a hogfish. And hogfish is supremely good eating. And you can't catch it on a fishing line. You have to shoot it. So it's a very expensive fish too. And of course, because it's in a preserve, it's bigger than your average hogfish. Now, hogfish is generally very safe. But when you shoot it in a preserve where it gets really, really big and it gets to eat other little fishies, it can contract ciguatera. These assholes not only poached a fish out of a preserve, they also sold it to a local seafood restaurant who then sold it to unsuspecting patrons and infected at least six people with ciguatera.
Oh my gosh.
So, to explain a little about ciguatera and what it does to the body, I went into the depths of the internet and I found a blog post. And the blog post is wonderfully graphic. So, this family is doing a night crossing from Vieques to Culebra. I'm pronouncing both of those terribly wrong, but it's fine.
What's a night crossing?
So it's when you take a boat overnight. So like you wake up, you're in one island, and then you go to sleep and the captain takes you to another island. So when you wake up, you're somewhere new.
Okay.
So it's nighttime, they're crossing the ocean, and they decide to just throw some fishing lines out the back just to troll, which means the boat is moving and the hooks are behind. And that's generally for bigger fish like sailfish, marlin, that kind of thing. So they've got these back, and one of the lines gets a hit near dawn. And so the fish puts up a huge fight. They finally pull it in. It seems kind of small. Nobody knows what it is.
Oh,
nobody can figure out what this mystery fish is. But they cut it up. They prepare the fish for supper.
What?
Everybody eats it. They said
what? Wait, back, beep, 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 beep. They don't know what it is, so they eat it?
They assumed it was safe.
Oh my.
Now remember, I said ciguatera is usually found in reef fish. They found this in deep waters. They assumed it was safe. So they said it looked like the shape of a mahi-mahi or a dorado or a dolphin, whatever name you want to call it, not like Flipper. But it had the coloring of a tuna, and nobody knew what the heck this thing was. But anyway, they cut it up. They serve it up for dinner. Everybody eats it. They said it resembled chicken in texture, thick and heavy, nothing like anything they'd eaten before.
Oh.
And the evening goes on. And then their daughters went to bed, and everybody hangs out and played some games, and then they go to bed. Well, and I quote, that is when the what seemed like timed release poison set in.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So the parents go to bed and their daughter wakes up complaining that her legs are sore. Dad spends the next half hour rubbing her legs, thinking maybe she's got some growing pains.
Okay.
Next thing is the other daughter coughs in that I'm going to puke cough. And so the wife whips that daughter out of bed, takes her to the toilet where she then proceeds to start throwing up. Okay. Well, now her legs are sore.
Oh my God.
And then mom starts feeling queasy. And then they go and realize that all the other guests are up and not feeling well. And then the husband's legs start hurting. And everybody was like, oh crap, it's the fish. We got food poisoning. So the rest of the night is spent with four adults and two children all getting sick on a boat with only two toilets.
I was going to say, how many toilets are there?
Two toilets on this boat.
Oh, God.
Awful, right? People are sleeping outside and throwing up overboard. Every bed is covered in towels just in case of, quote, spontaneous eruptions. And I'm just going to keep reading from this because he does a great job. Every bowl, bucket, and pot was being used as a vomit receptacle. Other than everyone exploding from both ends, we were experiencing some other very strange symptoms, such as sore joints, muscle spasms, tingling sensations, mixed up temperature sensations, confused taste buds, sore gums and teeth, headaches, and slight hallucinations.
I would be like, I'm dying.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Jesus.
Jesus. So the next morning, they arrive in the island. The wife gets some energy and goes out with a picture of the fish, trying to figure out what on earth is going on and what this fish is.
At least they took a picture of the fish before they yes. cut it up and ate it.
So what they ate is called a big-eyed jack. And they told them that normally other islands, that fish wouldn't be a big deal to eat. But since it was caught off the coast of Vieques, none of them would eat it. They blamed the waters around Vieques, saying that they are contaminated and intoxicating all of the fish with ciguatera due to the Navy's use of the area with its plethora of ordinances in the water.
Oh, man.
So, fishing guide says jack's okay to eat. Locals say absolutely not. So, they go to the Culebra Hospital, and everybody's getting IVs because they're losing too much fluid. And the doctor said that the locals won't eat 90% of the fish caught off the coast of this island simply because it has such a high rate of ciguatera. And remember, they're in a strange country. They go to the hospital. They're getting IVs. They're getting taken care of. Two ambulance rides. And they were terrified of the bill. The yeah. bill was – take a guess what the bill was.
Oh, God. If I think about it here in America with four adults, two children, two ambulance rides, and a hospital, here would probably be like $200,000.
$20.
Holy shit. I'm moving Holy there. Shit. But I'm not eating the fish.
Yeah. No, don't eat the fish. So.
Oh, my gosh. Were they out on a boat that had a guide or that had a captain?
Yes. Yes. The thing was the guide wasn't a local.
Oh, jeez.
So, one, it's a little weird that they didn't recognize the jack. But regardless, they ate a fish and it was infected with this stuff because apparently that waters off that island are infectious.
And there's no sign. I mean, you would think there'd be signs on the dock. The boat captain would know this, but he's not local.
You would think he's not a local. And again, it wasn't caught on the reef. They would assume it was safe, just like the hogfish that the locals caught. Oh. They knew that it was bigger than normal, but they didn't realize that because it had gotten to that size, it was now susceptible to ciguatera. So, ciguatera is the second most common disease for marine toxins. It is derived from a toxin found in algae called Gamberdiscus toxicus, which thrives primarily in reefs in tropical locations such as the Caribbean islands and Hawaii. Small, nice crackle. Small herbivorous fish nosh on the plant, and then larger carnivorous marine life such as barracudas, sea bass, and snapper eat those smaller fish. And once the big fish eat enough of the little fish, the toxin builds up to dangerous levels in their bloodstream. So this is something that fish can eat and not carry, but if they – that's why the bigger they get, the bigger the issue it is, because the more fish with the toxin they eat, the more toxin they have in their system, and then the more toxins they get into our system.
Yeah, yeah.
So eating – small seafood, shrimp, that kind of stuff, not going to be an issue. The older and the bigger the fish, the bigger the issue there is. So another case I found, this was in Women's Health, actually. This woman, Susie, was a personal trainer. And in 2011, she competed in a stand-up paddleboarding 8-mile race in Maui.
I can't even do an inch.
No board. I don't even think I can stand up on the board. So yeah. Somebody able to do 8 miles, my freaking hero. Well, afterwards, she went to San Francisco Bay and she started to notice that she was feeling weird. She began to itch all over. Her lips swelled up. And at first she tried to ignore her symptoms. She was on a 5-hour flight back to Hawaii and she didn't know what was going on. Mm. She thought it would pass, so she shrugged it off. People, if it's weird and it lasts more than 24 hours, don't shrug it off.
Don't. You should know.
Don't.
No.
Your body is trying to tell you something. And if you don't know what it's trying to tell you, ask a doctor.
Yeah.
So she found that she could not ignore her weird symptoms forever. And after a month.
What is up with these people waiting for forever to get checked out? No. I mean, I'm not one to go to the doctor like an hour after I don't feel good, but a month, a week.
This is up there with waiting 4 months to go see a doctor about a permanent erection.
Yeah, it's way up there with that.
way up there. But her condition worsened to the point where she felt tingling and burning sensations in her arms and legs. Now, here's where Sagittari gets weird. It causes you, when you touch things that are hot, they feel cold. And when you touch things that are cold, they feel hot.
Weird. I have never heard that.
Wild. Yes. No, it is bizarro. But anyway, she finally goes to an ER, which, by the way, one of my biggest pet peeves about working at an ER is when people come in and they're in the emergency room and when we say, how long has this been bothering you? And they say, a month.
God, I know.
Go see your primary care provider. That is clearly not an emergency, except in this case when it was.
Right. But she waited too long and it became an emergency. She waited too long.
Yeah, it became an emergency. If you get this stuff treated early, or even if she'd gone in immediately and was like, whoa, I'm feeling really weird, it's an emergency. But like, this is one of those few cases where like every instance of this was an emergency, just like, you know, permanent erection, dude. But like, that is my PSA. If you can wait a week or a month to see a doctor, you can wait a few more days to make an appointment. And if you can't wait a few more days to make an appointment, then you screwed up and you should have made an appointment a few days ago. That's all I'm going to say.
Preach.
Emergency room is for people with strokes. And then do not go there and be mad that it took you 8 hours to get seen because there are people with heart attacks who got in front of you. Sorry. Done.
Right.
Off the soapbox. Stepping off. Pushing the soapbox
away. Okay. I won't get on it.
Okay.
So let's move on.
Moving on. So she went to the emergency room and she finally learned what was going on. She got diagnosed with the Sagittari. Now, as I mentioned, this is something that gets you really sick really fast. So within 12 hours, you're going to see GI issues. Within 24 hours, you're going to start feeling that muscle fatigue. Ugh. And then the symptoms can get worse to what Susie experienced with sensory reversal and constant pain. She said, I was scared and really upset. I looked like a red turnip and I was really distraught.
Oh my God.
That is a visual, folks. That is a visual. So there is a potential treatment, okay, although there is speculation about how much it works. IV mannitol can significantly reduce pain and is most effective if it is taken within 72 hours of consumption of the contaminated fish. Now, the issue with that, of course, is within the first 72 hours, a lot of what you're feeling just kind of feels like food poisoning, so you may not go to the hospital for it. Right,
yes.
Now, some people have said that the mannitol works even weeks after eating the fish. Now, I think that some of that may just be placebo effect, mm-hmm, but that is an issue. That is a possible fix to the issue. Now, the road to recovery for this thing is
death.
You know, with yes, you have to die to get rid of it, like herpes. Anyway. I don't know why I'm on herpes tonight, but I'd like to make it very clear, I do not have herpes. But anyway, as I mentioned earlier, I don't remember if I mentioned that pre-recording of this show, but it's kind of like malaria. You get sick, you're sick for a while, you feel better, and then it comes back.
Yeah.
So you may go back to feeling normal within a few weeks, but it can literally hibernate inside your body and be triggered later by something in your diet. Oh. So drinking alcohol, eating contaminated fish. Now, we mentioned the toxin levels in the fish where it has to have a higher level to get you sick.
Right.
If you eat a big fish, even with a lower level of the toxin, it can still cause your Sagittari to flare up. If you eat high-fat foods, both good and bad fats, Sagittari can rear its head again. And the more times you get the illness, the stronger and worse the symptoms will get. So every time you have a flare-up, it will get worse. Now, everybody does eventually get better.
Okay, I was starting to worry.
Like, yeah, no. This is not a lifelong thing, although it is possible. I have heard of cases. Now, again, this is from my marine biology teacher, who was admittedly a pretty weird dude. I'm pretty sure that was not water in his water bottle. he talked about getting abducted by aliens. Oh, he was a Lord. Weird dude. Oh, he was legit, too. He was dead serious. But he swore up and down he knew of a guy who had ciguatera for 20 years.
What?
And then before it finally went away. Now, you can help get rid of it faster by avoiding the things we talked about. Avoiding alcohol, avoiding fish that may possibly be infected with the ciguatera, and avoiding fatty foods, which I would rather die. But
yes, I mean, I'd be dead by now. For no alcohol.
Yes. No cheese. No cheese would kill me.
Oh, gosh.
No cheese. No bacon. No cheese. No butter.
Oh, my God.
That's literally my worst nightmare. Somebody on keto would literally starve to death. But either that or get really skinny.
Yeah.
But Susie eliminated all fish from her diet and turned to alternative foods like lentils for protein. I mean, I don't know why she wouldn't just eat cows, but sure.
Or eggs or
eggs or pork or chicken. There are a lot of ways to get protein that aren't fish, but maybe she was a pescatarian.
Yes.
And that's what you get. No, I'm kidding.
Well, first of all, if I ate fish and it contaminated me, don't even think that I will ever touch another piece of fish for probably a good 20 years.
Yeah, no.
No.
That would be
– last thing
I
eat.
Like I said, I grew up in the Caribbean. I love fish. But one, I now live in, you know, the Midwest or the Deep South, depending on who you talk to. And – so, you know, not a lot of fish here. So I don't eat a lot of fish here because it's pre-frozen and I'm a snob. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, if a grouper got me sick, I don't know that I'd be able to eat grouper for a while. Especially not with – the hot to cold thing weirds me out. Like, I almost want to experience that. But at the same time, I don't want to just once. I want to, like, touch something hot and be like, oh, it's cold.
And then you're burnt.
But my last – ciguatera story shows that you can get it from another way, not just from eating fish. There is another way to contract this.
Okay. So what is another way you can get ciguatera?
Ciguatera. So two guys go out for a seafood dinner while vacationing in the Bahamas. Get some grouper steaks. What could be better? They're out there without their wives. Fun time.
Oh.
So a few hours after dinner, the men start having stomach pains and diarrhea, and their legs begin to burn and tingle, and their sense of temperature went haywire. Ice felt hot, fire felt cool. All the while, their wives, who of course weren't with them, are completely fine. Now, if you were in the throes of food poisoning, would you want to shtup your wife?
Oh my God,
no,
I just pictured.
No, there's things coming out of every orifice of your body. But these men apparently were so enamored with their wives that they couldn't resist. And they went, they manned up and they did what they needed to do and they satisfied their wives. Now, the issue is, now remember, their wives did not eat the fish.
No, yeah, okay.
But they did have sex with their husbands who ate the fish.
Okay.
And this is their husband's, so they're not using protection.
Well, yeah, okay.
So, according to the Journal of Clinical Toxicology, the men somehow passed the poison along to their wives through their semen.
Oh, my God.
Because for the next several weeks, the women had terrible pain and burning in their pelvis. They somehow transmitted ciguatera sexually.
Could they have transmitted it, though, through, like, saliva or something? Like, what if they were kissing after
but
they
it's
threw
in
up?
Their pelvis.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God.
So if you think about it, when you eat the fish, it's going into your mouth, down your esophagus, into your stomach, through all of your intestines, out your butt. So that explains why you're puking and you're pooping like crazy, because it's touched all of those parts of your body. When something goes into the vagina, the only place it has to go is the vagina, the cervix, the ovary – or not the ovaries, the uterus.
Uterus.
That's it. It has nowhere else to go.
So they weren't, the wives weren't puking or having diarrhea. They were just
they
having.
They were just in pain.
In pelvis pain.
Pelvis pain.
Oh,
ooh.
My.
So this NPR article actually describes what Ciguatera does a little better. It causes the molecules, the molecules of Ciguatera cause tiny little holes in your nerves, which is what cause all those crazy symptoms to include, of course, the reversal of temperature, vertigo, and the sensation that your teeth are falling out.
Ooh, ouch, 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 ouch.
Yes. Oh, and then there's also, shockingly, dyspareunia? I think I'm saying that right. Do you know what that means?
I can't even say the word.
Dyspareunia, maybe? It's painful sex.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard of we're going to probably have an episode about this.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have weird sex escapades. It's going to happen because, well, we've already done the penises and the buttholes. So, but this symptom isn't as commonly reported, not because it's more uncommon, but it's because it is information that people don't normally volunteer to their doctors.
No, I don't think I'd open up like
that. And that's why people, you need to. Because all of a sudden you realize there's a symptom that everybody has, but nobody wants to talk about because sex is super taboo and we're a country full of prudes. But if it hurts when you diddle, let people know.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like piddle. I mean diddle.
Diddle. Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly.
Yeah. It's so important to anytime you have any issues with your body and you know something's not right, tell somebody, go to your doctor. You know, there's doctor patient.
We don't mean WebMD.
Yeah. Don't go to WebMD.
That is not a thing. It'll say you have cancer and you're
dying. And trust me, when you go to a doctor or the emergency room and you tell them the situation, I'm going to bet you $1 billion, you're probably not the first case, and it's probably not the first time they've heard of what your symptoms are. So don't feel like you can't talk about it because you think you're the only one that has an issue or situation health-wise, because they have heard so much stuff.
Exactly. Now, they're doctors. You are very unlikely to be the weirdest thing they've ever heard. And if you are, it's more of a thing of pride than something to be embarrassed about.
Right. I mean, yeah. Just please talk to your doctor, nurses, or PAs now. I mean, it's so important because you don't want something you think, like you said, diarrhea and vomiting, you think it's food poisoning, but you know it's out of the ordinary because you have these other sensations as hot, cold thing. And
yeah, if you notice you were feeling temperature reversal and you've eaten fish, tell a doctor. Pronto. Remember, you only got 72 hours to get the mannitol.
Oh my God. Oops. Oh my goodness.
All right. So what have you got for us?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm never probably ever going to eat fish again. Instead of being a vegetarian, I'm going to be a fishitarian. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, it's the opposite of a pescatarian, where you, instead of eating only fish, you don't eat any fish.
I'm not going to eat any fish. So my story, and I am going to butcher this like crazy, which is nothing new. So I'm going to talk about, and I think we've all heard this legend, this myth about a creature in the Amazon. And
oh no.
Yeah.
Is it what I think it is?
And it has been discussed in so many BBC, National Geographic.
My personal favorite, Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy, River Monsters. So I will try not to screw the story up. So of all the creatures in the Amazon, there is none more feared than this tiny, tiny fish known as the canduro.
Oh, no.
Which is also known as the toothpick fish or vampire fish. So it is a species of a parasitic freshwater catfish native to the Amazon. So since coming to the attention of science in the early 19th century, this creature has occupied the very darkness of the popular imagination. And the reason for this is that the Condor's supposed habit of penetrating the urethra of men and women bathers, lodging itself in place with sharp barbs and festering on it from the inside. A horror story that's enough to keep your legs firmly closed for days. I'm closing mine now.
Yep. Mm-mm. Nope. I've had my legs crossed since you started.
So this is a small fish. They have a rather small head and a belly that can appear distended, especially after a large blood meal. Kind of like ticks.
Me after Thanksgiving?
Yeah. And that's just, you know, here shortly, so...
On a Taco Tuesday, one or the other.
Oh, Taco Tuesday. I love Taco Tuesday.
Yes, please. I don't know who invented it, but I love them.
I know. There are short sensory barbs around the head and together with short backward pointing spines on the gill covers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So typical early accounts describe the Condor as a very small but uniquely occupied in doing evil. So such melodrama is common in the 19th century writings on the fish. When a handful of European explorers came across people in the Amazon who regaled them with stories of this real life river monster. And there's a lot.
Wait, river monster, but you said it was tiny.
Right. But if this thing's a blood sucking vampire fish, it's a monster.
Okay. But they were using leeches to drain people of blood. So like pot, kettle, black, yo.
So this, the earliest published report of the Condor attacking a human host comes from German biologist C.F.P. von Matthus. No, that's French.
Just sound angry.
Matthus.
And guttural.
I can't. Okay. This German biologist was in 1829, but he never actually observed it, but rather was told about it by the native people of the area, including the men that would tie a ligature around their penis while going into the river to prevent this from happening. So he never saw it. He was just told these stories in 1829.
Okay.
And there were many, many horrible stories from the region regarding this human run-ins with the Condor. So it's not uncommon for people swimming or bathing in the river to urinate while you're in the water. Duh. Yeah. The story goes that a tiny, slender catfish cannot always distinguish a urinating human from an exhaling fish gill. And on occasion, it will attempt its trademark high-speed attack on some unfortunate soul's emerged, exposed urethra. So, perhaps the most horrifying of all of the remedies offered for the Condor in the privates is that some recommended a hot bath or herbs capable of dissolving the fish. The best way to get rid of the parasite is to remove the offending member altogether.
Wait, like the member?
The man with the member?
No, I'm going to make you say it. When you say they're taking off the member, taking off his...
The only means of preventing it from reaching the bladder, where it causes inflammation and ultimately death, is to instantly amputate the penis.
Oh! Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't know that!
Hi-cha!
No!
After all...
I almost did shark attacks and talked about traumatic amputation, but it turns out that you took care of the traumatic amputation for me.
Well, that'll be – you save that for another episode. So –
oh, my God.
After all, in reality, doing so would mean, duh, certain death for the fish. Who cares about your penis?
You think? It took my penis. So,
the most compelling idea is that – the waste ammonia secreted through the gills of fish is the means by which the Condor locate their prey. If that is true, urea could be similar enough to confuse these parasites into swimming up a stream of urine. In quotes, considering the alleged voracious habit of the little fish, the are you laughing? Did I say it wrong?
No. No, just voracious fish. It's I feel like I identify strongly with this little fucker. He just thought he was following his way to food, and the next thing you know, he's with the penis.
Oh my god. Sounds like my college years.
Oh my god, no. Oh god, I can never tell my parents this exists now. Or any future employers. So this is fine.
Considering their horrible, monstrous habit of the little fish, the geographical size of its habitat, and the considerable number of people living along the river system, should one not expect by now a few confirmed cases in the medical literature? In the past few decades, there has only been one semi-solid report of a Kandura attack.
I feel like the fact that you said semi means that it's not solid.
Yeah. So, in 1997, in an isolated capital of the Brazilian state of the Amazonas, a patient was wheeled in with a Kandura in his urethra. The victim underwent a underwent a two-hour urological surgery. So urologist Dr. Samed managed to extract the fish, dragging its carcass back out through the unfortunate victim's penis. Apparently, after it had jumped, now the fish, out of the water while this victim was relieving himself.
Wait, it jumped out of the water?
That is what the victim is saying, that he was peeing in the Amazon River about knee deep or thigh deep. And while he was peeing, the fish jumped out of the water. And so
that is some, that's really good aim though for the fish, because that's not a big hole. Right.
So Samad, Dr. Samad claimed that he removed the fish by opening the urethra, cutting the blades, and pulling the fish out, meaning cutting the spikes or barbs on the fish, and then pulling the fish out. It's unclear in his account what the after effects were for this patient, and since it's the only story, it's almost impossible to know if it would have caused an infection or disfigurement long term. So this incident was published by this doctor, and today it remains the only firsthand example of such a procedure in medical literature. Now, there are many skepticals, and in 1999, one particular skeptical, an American marine biologist, Stephen Spott, traveled to Brazil to investigate. He has a book on this, so he recounts the events of this investigation in his book, Kandura, Life and Legend of the Blood-Sucking Catfishes. I'm probably saying Kandura wrong. And then why do I want to add an accent every time I say it? Kandura. Kandura. So this gentleman, Spot, met Dr. Samed in person and interviewed him at his practice and home. Samed gave him photos, the original VHS tape of the procedure,
and
there's a tape, and you can see it.
I need that
on YouTube.
I need it.
Hopefully, when we get our website up, we will be linking all of our stories, pictures, any links, everything about our episodes on our website. We are working on that, so stay tuned. So he gave him photos. He gave him the VHS tape of the procedure and the actual fish's body preserved in formaldehyde.
No. Oh, God. I just got chills.
Yeah.
No. So. No.
Now, remember, the patient insisted that this vampire fish had ascended his urine stream before violently lodging itself in his urethra. But according to biomechanics expert John Bertram of the University of Calgary in Alberta, Canada, this is absolutely ridiculous. Now, this Bertram says that In order to swim up a pee stream, the fish would have to swim faster than the stream flow and lift itself out of the water against gravity.
Oh, yeah.
Think about that. And then in any event, even if the Kandura could power itself up the stream, it would have to stay completely within the urine, and that would be difficult because you're swimming against. So essentially, the idea is that the Kandura can propel itself into a penis in this way is not just unlikely. It is against the laws of fluid dynamics.
I would agree with that. My guess is the guy was in the water and I think he put the Kandura in there.
Well, okay. So next, next there is the specimen. So remember this doctor took out this fish and actually has it. So, fish. Right. Now, not only is Samad's proudly preserved fish far too large, it bears no signs of having inserted itself anywhere. The doctor claimed that he had snipped the spines of the fish, which would have been crucial if the fish were to be pulled back out. But the fish that was given to the marine biologist Spot was completely unblemished. It had all the spikes, all the barbs on the fish, and it didn't make sense if the doctor removed all these spikes. Still,
lies.
Still, Spot is unwilling to entirely write the incident off yet. So he states, I mean, the patient didn't even know what a Condurus was, so it's hard to believe that he just invented the story, the patient. Nevertheless, when pressed on how likely he feels a Kandura attack actually is for someone urinating in the Amazon, about the same as being struck by lightning while also being eaten by a shark.
Jesus.
Oh my gosh. I need another drink. Okay. What ultimately emerges from this fishy tale is a message of science trumping over superstition. It is important never to underestimate the power of the natural world. Regardless of science, this world is... Remember when we talked about... in Ironic, I mentioned about the eyeworms. And I said there were 6,700 rare parasites a year sent to the CDC. Rare. I mean... Our world is...
I'm sorry. That was literally what I was doing the entire episode. I hate eyeballs.
The most important thing, and this goes towards your story, the most important, it is always wise to heed the advice of locals and avoid urinating in the Amazon River at all costs. Just don't pee in the river. I mean, people wash their clothes and some, you know, in other countries, and they take baths, and kids play in there.
And a fish might swim up your pee hole.
Okay. And when the natives of Amazon speak, one would be foolish not to listen.
Absolutely.
They are the most privy to some of the world's most horrible truths. That country, Amazon, and all those things in this world, just don't mess with it.
Nope.
And when the locals say, don't eat the fish, don't eat the damn fish.
Don't eat the fucking fish. Ooh, I went harder than you did on the cussing.
Don't eat the fucking fish.
Don't eat the fish. If you don't know what the fish is, don't eat the fish. If the fish has a texture and consistency that you've never experienced before, don't eat the fucking fish.
Oh, God. I'm not eating fish ever again. I'm a fish person being from Alaska. I love fresh fish. Salmon, halibut, you name it. I've had it. I love it. But I'm not touching fish for at least 48 hours.
You know, I do wonder, though. The Colbera, you said it was called?
Kanduro.
Kanduro. Oh, I was thinking of a fish that gets cigatera. My bad. So... It does kind of make you wonder, though, if they wanted to try and get a specimen if they would just have like a whole line of men line up and pee into the Amazon.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you wanted to sacrifice yourself for science.
I mean, it's modern day. We can totally get it out, do plastic surgery. You'd never even know that there was trauma.
Right.
I mean, it would hurt.
Yeah.
But then it would be over. And then you get paid because you get this specimen that, with proof that it will swim up a pee hole. Like, that's the thing. You offer a reward. If they get a fish to swim up their pee hole, they get money.
Oh, my gosh.
And free surgery.
Yeah, free surgery. Totally.
Boom. Boom. Nailed it. That's how you do the research. You're welcome, America.
So, don't pee in the river or the... Well, I mean, if you have to, you have to. But don't pee in the water. So... that was our episode this week, Water Worries. And I hope you learned something. I think I did.
Yeah. No, so, I learned a lot.
Yeah. So Claire, do you want to take us out?
Thank you everyone for joining us for this episode of Drunk Medical Stories. We hope you had a great laugh and maybe learned a little something as well today. I know we did. If you enjoyed the episode and this podcast, please help us spread the word. We would love if you would subscribe, rate, and review. It'll really let people know we're out here. Sharing is caring. If you don't have anything nice to say, well, then don't say anything at all. Don't leave a comment, don't review, don't listen again. Easy peasy. Our cover art was designed by podcastdesigns.com. Our sound editor for this episode was Michael Colby from Jack Billing Presents, Me and My Neighbor Michael. Lordy Lou. If you'd like more... It's my favorite thing from that show. If you would like more content, please check out our Facebook group, Drunk Medical Stories Podcast. And you can find us on Twitter at DMSPod. If you have a story you think we would like, send it to us at dmspodcast@yahoo.com. Respect privacy. Please change names and remove places from your cases. If we like your story, we might just feature it. Until next episode.
If you go to the Amazon, cover up your penis.
If you have food poisoning, don't give it to your wife through sex. Sexually transmitted food damn you, dogfish. I'm glad this episode didn't last much long. God damn it, Terry, it's a Wednesday night.
And I have to wake up in 8 hours for work.
Oh, shit. It's fine. It's fine. I have an hour and a half commute to work. It'll be okay.
Well, you can listen to...
I can listen to our podcast. It'll be fine. Oh, God, no. The latest one we have up is the I episode, and I might actually vomit.
That's my favorite episode.
It was honestly, I think it was one of the best episodes you've done, which makes me kind of sad because I obviously wasn't in it. So clearly we need to have Mike come back and do an episode with the three of us. Hashtag threesome. But no, hashtag Menage Michael. There it is.
Menage Michael.
Menage Michael. If you want a menage with Michael, you let us know because he is hilarious, and I loved that you could feel how uncomfortable he was.
Oh my god,
eyes, and it was beautiful.
It was so funny. I was just like, I tried to hold things in because I could just hear him squirming and breathing, and
oh god,
I was like, yes.
It was beautiful. I am so glad he took one for the team and did that episode with you because I was screaming no at the top of my lungs. I was hoarse when I got home from screaming at my car radio listening to that episode. So well done.
Thank you.
Don't tattoo your eyes. Don't have erection for longer than 4 months. And don't pee in the Amazon.
Gotcha.
Two cops sitting around talking about the old days and talking about being police officers in the current climate. If you're a fan of Live PD or cops, you're going to want to tune in to rollcallroom.com. These two officers, Mike and Nick, they talk about cop stories. They talk about everyday life. They talk about stressors of being on the job. This is not just a podcast for law enforcement officers. It's for everyone. If you love cop stories, tune into rollcallroom.com. Go to iTunes and Spotify or any podcast outlet. You'll want to check them out. Check them out on Twitter at rollcallroom.com.